Well, thank you so much for tuning in to the 1 Minute Apologist podcast with Dr. Bobby Conway. I am your host, Tim Hall. We are going to be listening to the second half of an interview that Bobby did with Cameron Bartuzzi from Capturing Christianity. So if you feel like you're listening to this episode and you're missing a little bit, you probably are, because if you haven't listened to last week's, you might be a little bit lost in the conversation. So if you're tuning into this one and you didn't listen to last week's, it would be helpful for you to jump back and listen to that one. So without further ado, we'll get right into their conversation.
Welcome to the 1 Minute Apologist. 1 Minute Apologist. Apologetics seeks to give credible answers to curious questions, to give a defense.
So as a pastor, Bobby, what is like the number one source of doubt that you came across in your congregation? Like when they, I assume that you would counsel people from time to time. So what were like some of the main types of doubts that you saw with them? Were they the same? Were they different?
Well, I think in general, our doubts, when we push them up to that macro level, there's not as many doubts that trouble people on a macro level as they do certainly on a micro level. And those doubts, by and large, are the same questions that have troubled people for a long time. But I do think in this culture of relativism, I do think with, you know, the age of the internet, we live in a melting pot culture of beliefs. I think that pluralism is a huge thing for people. You know, people are working next door to people at the office and with a Muslim or Jehovah's Witness or a relativist, and they like these people and they care about these people. And so they're trying to square their faith up with this pluralistic world that they now live in. It's easy in a quarantine world of Christianity to feel safe in that bubble. But once we start interacting and bumping into other people, I think that the pluralistic world we live in can be challenging. But the danger is for somebody to just become a pluralist then, because that's not the answer, because these have contradictory truth claims, these different beliefs. So we don't want to become a pluralist. We just want to recognize with fallibility, there comes lots of different worldviews out there, and we have to do our best to kind of figure out how to live in a world of pluralism. I think the problem of evil and suffering has always been a problem, and it remains. I think that in this post-Christian era in America, there's just an indifference to the church because it's hard to really where that passion is for people. People are getting the bad news of the bad Christians in the press. So those would be some things. And then just the Bible too. I mean, how can I trust in it? You know, when you read the scriptures, this was a big doubt of mine, Cameron. It's what I call the apparent ridiculous. I would read the Bible and I struggled because looking at the biblical context through a 21st century lens, there's so many things that just seem crazy. Like, we talk about all the funny things that Mormons believe, but I go, man, we got some odd things too, you know, floating axe head and, you know, falling bread and, you know, a pillar of fire. There's all sorts of bizarre things, you know, Ezekiel lay on your side for, you know, this many days, 390, now flip over and give me 40 more days, you know, while you play with pots and pans. This is weird. And I think people don't always know how to relate to the culture in scripture. Abraham, go sacrifice your son Isaac. And we go, oh man, look at Abraham's faith. But other people go, I can't even believe in a God like that. So we have to be careful to not look at the scriptures through our 21st century lens. Rather, we have to kind of step into the ancient world. And we need to be able to talk about the tension it creates in our Bible study time of how odd this is. There was a season, Cameron, I had a hard time reading the Bible because I would just go to have my devotion in it. And then there would be some weird, bizarre passage like David, you know, who took a census and now all these people are going to be hosed at his expense. And I would wrestle with it. But I tried to just become more informed and chase these doubts down. And eventually I feel like God, look, somebody who struggles with doubts, that's just an invitation to become an apologist.
I like that. Okay. So this is one thing I was thinking about relative to doubts is that like, doubts come in different degrees, right? We can have like a little doubt, we can have a lot of doubt. And so does that change how we respond to the doubts depending on how much we have?
I do think that some people can live with doubt better than others. So my personality is an obsessive analyzer. And I talk about this in my book, Doubting Toward Faith, that the people who I believe struggle the worst with doubts are those that have the personality makeup of an obsessive analyzer. On the obsessive side, it's somebody with some OCD tendencies. And on the analytical analyzer side, it's somebody who really wants good logical understanding of something. Now, if somebody's analytical, but they're not obsessive, then they can get detached. But if they're not, they'll end up being in this struggle where they hyper obsess and it's harder to unlock. If somebody's obsessive, but they're not analytical, they might not ever really obsess on truth at all. They might obsess on other issues. They might have given their life to Jesus, but have never bumped into obsessing on their analytical thoughts that they have. So here's another thing. I think then people who are very much right-brained as well, the left brain's that logical side, the right brain, very artsy, creative, those people, and that's, I'm a combination. I'm very, very right-brained, and I'm also very left-brained. So I've got that logical side, but I also have this abstract, creative side, and I think people like that also struggle with doubts. I think that's why Soren Kierkegaard, somebody like that, who would have struggled with a lot of that Weltschmerz, that existential angst. So I think temperament, Cameron, is a really big thing for some people. And that's why, as Jude 22 says, we should be merciful to those who doubt. Sometimes people that might be very mathematically minded might just look at someone and say, hey, give it up. What's the big deal? Don't mess with this. But we have to be sympathetic because this person, their temperament might be there. Somebody who's been abused in the past or false led in the past, they might have trust issues. So this is where I'm bringing out kind of my pastoral heart and putting on the counseling side, that there's a way to help people in their doubts. And sometimes apologists just want to say, here's the answer. And then sometimes pastors just want to say, just pray more. And I think we need to be more holistic in how we deal with doubters and the different degrees that they're struggling with it.
So I was going back to your interview with Frank Turek on Cross Examined, I heard you say that doubt is not a Christian problem. It's actually a human problem. I thought that was really interesting. So why is that important? Why is it important to say that doubt is actually just a human thing?
I think it's important because we all have finite minds. And God is the only one who's omniscient. It certainly would be the stance of a Christian who holds to a God in the Anselmian sense of the greatest conceivable being. And so knowing our limitations, that is going to put us all in check, right? I remember preparing to teach the Bible once, and I was sitting on my front porch, and I started looking out at my front lawn, and then for some sick reason, I started picturing my brain out in front of me, about 3-4 feet out in front of me, and I started looking at that thinking, so there it is, this 3.5-pound mass, and that's what I got to work with in tomorrow's sermon, and I'm supposed to tell people about this gigantic cosmos as I was looking out in the starry night. And I thought, my goodness. And then I comforted myself by remembering that my mind is not my brain, and I worked through it. But nevertheless, I'm still finite and I'm limited. And all of us are at the luxury of other people's scholarship. None of us, even the things I'm sharing right now, I have no idea how much I've been influenced by past mentors, experiences. And so I have to recognize that I'm fallible and I'm just doing the best I can to please God with my broken mind. And I realize that the atheists or the Muslim or the Jehovah's Witness, they've got questions. So I think apologetics, when we can move away from having to give just a defense, but when we become aware of their Achilles heel, their questions, now we don't always have to be on the defensive. And so that's the great thing. When we begin to really learn about other worldviews and atheism and naturalism and therapeutic moral deism, we can then think about all their questions. And so one of the things that I was doing, Cameron, is I had to sit there and think, look, to leave Christianity for the doubts that I have is only to walk away from my faith and inherit another set of unforeseen doubts, some that I might think of, some that I haven't thought about. And so I realized that when I was doubting, agnosticism seemed like the most attractive position because I could be the perpetual skeptic. But then I realized as I walked out of that, I thought, well, I could tell the agnostic there's at least one thing you're not agnostic about, and it's this, that there is an explanation. So wouldn't you rather give your life to the best explanation instead of saying that you can't have any? And so through this whole process, I came to believe that Christianity is the best explanation, but through my doubts, I was able to become more equipped and also was able to become aware of what doubts I would inherit if I left Christianity. And I realized that while Christianity doesn't close the doubt gap completely, it closes it more on the big questions that I want answered than the other views have on offer for me.
So here now I'm thinking about the phenomenological experience of doubt, like anxiety, your heart starts to race, you start to get like cold sweats, depending on who you are, you know, you deal with doubt in different ways. Do you think that it's different, like if you're an atheist and you're experiencing doubts, or is that more like person relative? What would you say about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. It is a very insightful question. And here's why. I do think some belief systems, you'll have more of this phenomenon of doubt, of angst. For me, it was very much panic. Here's the other thing, Cameron. I mean, I'm just a jacked up guy, right? I mean, I'm a recovering alcoholic, very much of an addict personality, OCD tendencies, massive anxiety disorder. And when you put the anxiety together in with the OCD and analyzing, man, I was a perfect candidate just to be pounded by this stuff. And I can remember laying in bed gasping, Cameron, literally gasping, having panic attacks at the thought of I'm on this chunk of, you know, blue earth moving at massive speeds and feeling like, God, I've got to know you're sustaining this whole thing. And so I know what it feels like to feel the force of that in a very harrowing way. Here's why I think Christianity's so much scarier for us, because it costs us so much more to leave it. I mean, for the atheist who gives up his atheism or the agnostic who gives up his agnosticism, it's a lot different. But for the Muslim who gives up believing in Allah, they're going to experience a tremendous amount of rejection, or the Jehovah's Witness or the Mormon. So I would say there are certain beliefs that hold with it because of our view of what happens after death, or because of our view of rejection that can ensue, which the nice thing about the church is we don't believe we should be, you know, hating loved ones who apostate, unlike Islam. But we do believe that if somebody apostates, then they're in this situation where they're going to spend an eternity separated from God, or even for the conditionalist, they'll at least say they're going to have some time of purging post-death before they're annihilated.
So growing up in the church, I heard like all the time that doubting is sin. You can't sin. You have to be like, basically, you have to be 100% convinced that Christianity is true. Otherwise, you're like living in sin. You know, doubt is like this big nasty thing you want to avoid at all costs. What are your thoughts on whether doubt is sin?
You know, that's a tough one. Because I don't think our doubts honor God in the sense if they're skeptical. And that is how I kind of come to this term of skeptical and sincere. I do think that somebody could be a new Christian, for example, and be passionate about their faith and uneducated, and they take a philosophy class, and this person's an atheist and they're brilliant. I can see how somebody could be doubting, but they don't mean it as an affront to God. They're not trying to sin, but they are doubting. But they're doubting because they're not equipped yet in their journey to handle what they've been faced with. And so this is kind of where I feel like it's not always an easy thing to know when we cross that line into sin. I'm sure I fell into sin in some of my doubts as I was getting jaded, wondering, God, where are you? You seem so shy. You seem so absent. You seem remote. But I also know that God knows each individual's heart, and he can weigh our motives. He's able to weigh how much knowledge we have in the moment. He knows if we're trying to be skeptical or sincere. And I think that God ultimately can discern that. But I do think that there is a way that somebody can just be met with some doubts and not be sinning. Even on things like, okay, somebody's a young earther starting off in their faith, and they believe in young earth creationism. Well, what happens when they read old earthers later, and then they end up buying into those arguments? Well, in order for a young earther to become an old earther, they had to doubt their young earth teaching in the process of becoming an old earther. So the question is, was it a doubt or sin for the young earther to doubt his young earth creationism, or would it be a doubt for the young old earther to doubt his old earth creationism? I think that's where on those particularities, we have to step back and go, I think the bigger place where we could get into sin is not on age of the earth, but on, do we doubt that there's a creator at all?
I'm thinking about in Mark 9:24, it says, Lord, I believe, but help my unbelief.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess in the context of like that type of verse, it does kind of seem like unbelief is a bad thing. Like you don't want to have it. Help me get rid of this unbelief.
Yes.
And so it sort of looks like it is kind of a sin, right?
Yeah, I can see that. I think that this is just one example where he wants to see his child healed, and that was his expression of it. I guess the question is all of our doubts the same way? I can see how we could all say in our doubts, hey, help us with our unbelief. But I can also see how somebody could be doubting Cameron, and maybe they wouldn't want to say, help me with my unbelief in that you're the creator, but rather help me to feel encouraged with an answer where I feel ignorant with these questions that I have. And so I do think, as Ravi Zacharias said, there's a difference between questioning something and having doubts. And I would distinguish it like, you know, all doubts entail questions, but not all questions necessarily entail doubts. So I think it's better to be in the place of just asking questions. Some point along the way, it might shift into doubts. And I think there's a sincere doubter, and then it shifts into skeptical doubt. And I think it's safe to say that the skeptical stage, we're in sin, but where that shifts, I'm not exactly sure.
So I think that
Lord be merciful.
So I think that with this verse in Mark 9, I'm not sure that it does actually imply that now that I'm looking back at it. Because in the previous verse, it says, Jesus said to him, if you can believe, all things are possible to him who believes. It doesn't say, if you can believe, then you won't be sinning, right? It says, if you believe, all things are possible. So he's talking about like his son being healed, right? So it does seem like that's what he's talking about. He's not talking about like, the father of the child cries out and said with tears, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. As in like, help me believe so that my child can live, right? So it doesn't seem like it necessarily implies that like unbelief is a sin. I don't know. I'm just kind of spitballing off the top of my head.
I even imagine, you know, in the early church controversies, you had these different preceding beliefs that, you know, later would become deemed heretical, you know, Arianism or Docetism or Ebionism. Or Nestorianism, some of these attacks on the nature of Christ and what was going on. You know, I can picture people sitting around the table looking at the data that was before them, the biblical material, trying to get the closest authority to the apostles as they could. And I can see that there could have been some confusion for people in the process, because as progressive revelation comes on the scenes and you're trying to put that all together, I think it's a little bit like John the Baptist. John the Baptist was in a situation where he as a Jew would have been like the other Jews. What would have led him to wonder if Jesus was the Messiah? Well, they had an idea of the Messiah coming and setting up the kingdom on earth now. And what he saw is, why am I in prison right now? What the heck's going on? This doesn't fit the description of what the Messiah was to do. And so he was having to work through what the coming of Christ meant. And so I think in the same way, fast forward 2,000 years, we are all Christians, believing in Jesus, but depending upon which denomination or church or readings that we've had or experiences, we start questioning things, and that's part of just the maturing process. And as we progress along the way, we're just trying to put things together, but it creates some angst for us at times. And so I think that's where we look back and go, we need to be generous with the church, with their doubts, and gracious, help them to hold on to orthodoxy, but by all means, not make them feel like heretics for asking questions.
Yeah. And I mean, and in Jude 22, it says the exact thing, like, right, be merciful to those who doubt. Like, exactly. That's commanded in the Bible. You can't get out of that. All right. So we're about to close out our time here, but I have one last question, which is like, okay, so I think one of the biggest things that we have to do when we're dealing with doubts is, first of all, acknowledge our doubt, like recognize that hey, I have this doubt. I'm doubting about this particular question or problem or whatever. We have to acknowledge it. First of all, like, think about it, acknowledge that we have it, bring it to God. But then my question is, what are the next steps? Where do we go from there, from the point of like acknowledging, yes, I have this doubt, I have this nagging question that I can't get past. What is the next step? Because obviously the thing that you don't want to do is to just leave it alone and ignore it, right? You want to do something about it. So what is that something?
So let's take the case with John the Baptist and his disciples going to Jesus. Well, what does Jesus do as the great apologist? What was his pastoral approach with John? I think we can learn a lot from him right there. He speaks to the nature of John's doubts by providing evidences that he fits the description of the Messiah that the Jews were looking to come, in the fact that the blind see, the lame walk, the deaf hear. So I think we want to be able to, first and foremost, go to the scriptures. So if I was just being extremely practical, nuts and bolts, I would say to the person who's doubting, here's some practical advice. Number one, step back and just consider, what are your doubts? Start writing down all the different doubts you have, be it about God, be it about humanity, be it about heaven, hell. Start writing all those doubts down. Then try to group those doubts into macro categories. Then once you group those doubts into macro categories, you might have stuff like the trustworthiness of Scripture, the existence of God, the problem of evil and suffering, what about those who've never heard? Then after you group those, then ask yourself the question, which group among the groups that you've identified gives you the most amount of angst? Where do you feel the most amount of struggle? Then what I would say is take that group and then figure out who the best scholars are and the best orthodox
popularizers.
Thank you so much. Those who popularize the scholars. So, because sometimes in order to get to the scholars, we have to find our way through to them by their translators, those who can popularize. So, for instance, what you're doing, Cameron's great. You know, paying attention to things you're providing, you will help people to be prepared to go into the scholarship. And so by having great sites like Capturing Christianity or Going to Reasons to Believe or Stand to Reason or Cold Case or, you know, looking at Frank Turk's stuff or Reasonable Faith, go check out Woman Apologist videos. By checking out the answers to your macro category in those areas, you can start studying. And I'd also say, begin looking at what the Bible has to say about those macro categories, asking the Lord through prayer to comfort you, realizing that we need to seek Him, and asking God to help you to just trust the Word of God and believe that when all said and done, the benefit of your doubts will result in you'll become more aware of the scholarship out there. You'll become more aware of popular level apologetic sites. You'll be more confident in talking to those who have questions. You'll be more equipped as an apologist. And you will be able to refine your mind for the glory of God and trust that through that process, that when all said and done, Christianity is certainly a reasonable faith.
By the way, Christianity is true. That's our slogan. Just wanted to throw that out there. It's interesting that you ended on that note. And that was, I think, a perfect summary of what we've discussed today. But where can people go to buy your book on doubt? Is that just on Amazon?
Yes, they can go to Amazon. They can see any of my writings there. And Doubting Toward Faith is there. They can go to YouVersion. I've got a studies that I put together on doubt if they just kind of want to dig into it more. I've got lots of videos on doubt. I've interviewed Oz Guinness on doubt and others on doubt. So they can begin checking out those types of resources there. And want to encourage them to go to oneminuteapologist.com and become a team member there, where they can have access to extra podcasts and extra bonus material and so on and so forth as well.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Bobby, for coming on to Capturing Christianity. It's been awesome. Great discussion on doubt.
Thank you for having me, bro. I appreciate it. It was really great to be with you today, bro.
Awesome, man. Yeah, likewise. It was great to meet you. I'm still like staring at your jacket over here. Your camouflage jacket looks so awesome.
Thanks, man. Oh, it's comfortable, bro.
Yeah, you look comfy back there, just sitting up. I guess you're on your bed. You're just sitting on your bed back there.
I'm just chilling. That's right, man.
Just chilling with your doubts.
Yes.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that conversation with Cameron Bartuzzi. We really enjoy Cameron's ministry, Capturing Christianity. You can find out more information about Capturing Christianity. He's having some great interviews and dialogues on his channel. The link to his website will be in the description of this episode. Just a few quick reminders as we wrap things up today. We usually are releasing about 2 new videos a week on our YouTube channel. So if you haven't already, head on over to youtube.com/oneminuteapologist, click subscribe, hit the notification bell, and you'll be informed when those new videos are posted. We are releasing a podcast a week, which you just listened to, so that's fantastic. And we also have blogs that come out every single Wednesday. So you can head on over to oneminuteapologist.com/blog and check out the blogs there. If you haven't already, like us on Facebook, social media, all of those things, Twitter, Instagram, and that will help keep you connected to what's going on at One Minute Apologist. And we love to hear your comments and feedback. You can leave a comment on our Facebook post or Twitter. You can share some of our tweets. You can check out the blog and leave comments on some of the posts there. So we just really enjoy the conversation and the back and forth. So with that said, we will see you next week. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. If you want to help spread the word, please leave us a 5-star review and tell your friends about this resource. Also, be sure to check out our YouTube channel and blog for more credible answers to curious questions.